Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joining us right now is the guy who, let me just list off the myriad of accomplishments. Princeton grad. He's been a scout and an evaluator for a variety of teams. The Bills, the Eagles, the Giants. Won Super Bowl twice. He is now an NFL Network analyst and wears the other hat of being executive vice president of football operations for the XFL, which is coming back in 2023. And that is a guy I got to know over the last two or three years, a guy I really enjoy talking football with. That's Mark Ross. Mark, man, thanks for joining us here on the show this morning, taking some time. I appreciate it.
Of course, man. My pleasure.
All right, so let's get right to it. I've been a proponent. You and I dabble in the evaluation and personnel game, right? And so before we get to the specifics of the XFL and the NFL collaboration that is going on, I think it's been needed for a long time. We have practice squads in the NFL, but what are you really doing with a practice squad? I mean, you tell me. I don't know. It doesn't appear that a lot of guys get developed because of the practice squad. There's limited reps, limited opportunities. I just felt like the NFL has needed their own G League or their own minor league baseball system. The NFL has needed an opportunity to have a true player development league that they partner with for years and years and years. Is that what this has an opportunity to be beyond the things we're going to get into that have already been discussed?
Yeah, I think it's set up as we're set up as an independent league and not a direct direct funnel into the NFL. But yes, as you mentioned, the guys are going to get a chance to play real football and play in games. And Lance, you mentioned practice squad. For people to understand, you know, those guys are really just they're reading off cards and simulating the opponent, and they're not really getting live game reps. A lot of what they do during practice is help just prepare the team to play another team. So there's kind of a limit on how good they can get because, in my view, you know, guys are practice stars, but once you get into a game, that's when you really shine and flourish and you can show what your skills are, your weaknesses, your strengths, and you really develop as a player in real game situations. So that's kind of limited in the NFL with no matter how many years guys are on a practice squad, just because they never get in the game in the regular season during training camp. There's 80 guys and guys have to rotate snaps. So for us, it'll be a chance for players to actually get live game experience, play in games. Where that goes from there, we'll see with these guys. But we hope it does become when these guys play and they get developed in our league. And if they go to the NFL, they go to the NFL. That's the ultimate goal. But for us, we're trying to be a stand-up independent league where we get some good football players too.
Yeah, and I guess there's conversations to be had in the future as everything gets fleshed out. Because I would really love to see, hey, we're going to farm out here are five players from our practice squad, young guys that we want to get. We're going to keep the veterans on the practice squad here, and we want these young guys to go get, you know, because we talk about development on a practice squad all the time when I'm writing these players up. But the fact is, as you mentioned, there's not a whole lot of opportunity for development. So an opportunity to have a league, and your league is still going to be in the spring, right? I mean, you're not doing anything in the fall, so it's still a different time frame, which is very, very beneficial to potentially have those opportunities for guys who are bounce backs from the NFL who hope to bounce back into the NFL.
Right. Yeah. So as you mentioned, our time frame will be February till May. And so that's where guys aren't playing in the league. And, you know, hopefully it gets to the point where it is sort of a synergy between us where a guy wants the NFL team wants a player to play in games and get developed. And hopefully we'll get to that point. Right now, we don't start till 2023 in February. So we're developing a lot of stuff, but eventually we hope it does get to that point. The better collaborations that we have with the NFL, the better relationships we have with them in all fronts, I've always felt was really the optimal goal for a startup league, XFL in particular, but it's also for the NFL. So the more we can develop and develop relationships and partnerships with them, it'll be wonderful.
Mark Ross, Executive Vice President of Football Ops with the XFL, is our guest today. So some of the things that are being not just discussed, it's been agreed upon, this is part of the collaboration, is let's go through some of the areas where you guys are going to work with the NFL. The NFL is a real-time league where they don't have opportunities to install certain types of changes to check and see how they go other than preseason. And we know that's trending towards being less and less preseason as we move forward. The XFL really had some, I thought, intriguing when I watched Roughneck game. I like some of the innovation that they had with 2 points, with fourth downs, with simple things like how they spotted the football. Talk about some of the areas where the XFL, from an inventive and creative standpoint, could help the NFL advance their game further in terms of being more proactive to make necessary changes, in whether it's technologically based or just the pace of play or just the way the game is played.
Yeah, and I want to get specific things just because we got to still finalize a lot. But those, just say the rules, you know, where they can't in a game, just in a real-time game, say, we want to test this new rule that we're trying to do. But for us, we could do that for them, officiating, okay? Or let's these new calls we want to have, or how we spot the ball, or use technology to help with certain officiating and rules aspects of the game. Let's do that. Broadcast tenets, you know, things that they don't want to see. They go, we want to have such and such, and we can do that. So anything sort of that we talked about, and, you know, for us, it's been a collaboration for a while. I've known Troy Vincent, who's the Executive Vice President of Football Ops, since I was 23 when I first started with the Eagles, and he was a player there. So it's really been a wonderful relationship where I've had a personal and professional relationship with him for a long time. So it's really been a lot of conversations with him and collaborations with him. So, yeah, anything with player safety is also huge. Player health and safety is also huge for them. It's something they want to keep diving deep on to improve and get better, and those sort of things as well that we can help out as far as equipment or fields or anything that could new technologies that could help with the safety of the game. We're open to do it all, and we're open to help out.
What is it about the officiating? I read something about how the officiating, there's an opportunity. Is it for the development of officials to bring them into the next group that come into the NFL? Like, how is it going to be different with the officiating? What are you doing?
Well, again, I can't dig in too deep, but we're going to have some prominent people helping us with our officiating and rules and possibly with the development of people. So we're Lance, anything that you could think of, we're going to try to do it. And it really boils down to our ownership. And everybody knows Dwayne Johnson, but Danny Garcia, who's the first woman owner of a sports league, who's really tremendous with her vision and what she wants to accomplish for the players. And Jerry Cardinale, who's the founder of Redbird Capital, who's also part of the ownership group. And it's really because of them and our relationship, collaborations and talks with ownership group about what they want to get accomplished and what we can get accomplished or trying to get accomplished. And we're all on the same page about the vision of let's make this the best player experience and innovative from all aspects.
So you guys don't start up until the fall, spring of 2023. Do you anticipate a lot of, a lot more discussions and a more robust build out with the NFL? I mean, is this just the things that we've read, is this the general guideline and outline of what's going to take place? Or do you expect there still to be a lot more?
Start. Oh yeah, Lance, this is okay. Just the start, just the framework where we were just trying to iron out the major principles of what we wanted to get accomplished. And then from there, things will grow and flourish. We still have a lot of foundation that we need to get in place, and we'll have some major announcements coming up here within the next couple months that I think will be tremendous as well. But I think just that start yesterday and that touch point of getting that out there, I think it took a lot of people by surprise. I think a lot of people were like, whoa, that's pretty amazing. That kind of opens up. It gives us legitimacy. When you see that you see that you have a collaboration with the NFL, that's instant credibility and that's instant where people may be, well, I don't know. And then all of a sudden you have that, well, hey, they're calling and begging you, you know. So it's kind of we have a lot of work still to be done. We have a lot of ideas that are still on the table that we need to hash out, a lot more brainstorming, and it'll be fun and advantageous for all.
But I think it's important to still mention you guys are a standalone independent league, even though you're collaborating. So are the choices going to be the XFLs in terms of other, you know, in terms of some of the ideas that the XFL has, the brainstorming? Do you still have complete freedom to come up with your own concepts and ideas for your own league? Or is that kind of a little bit more now under the umbrella? Since you're a standalone,
no,
I assume you got your own.
No, anything that we put into place and anything that we do, it'll be because of what our decision makers decide to do. The NFL, it's a collaboration. It's not a dictatorship. Hey, you guys do this. We want this done to do it. It's just going to be more of conversations and brainstorming with them to say, we have this idea. Hey, how can we help with this? Or they have an idea. How can we help with that? It's never going, but everything we do, we're the XFL. We're not NFL light. We're not NFL junior. We're the XFL, and we're going to be a strong standalone league, and we're going to make our mark. But that being said, it still is an amazing collaboration with the NFL, and we're trying to have it be as robust as possible.
Are you still? Am I going to see you in Indy? Are you watching any players right now, or is this taking up all your time?
Oh, Lance, I'm crushing it. No,
I was going to say,
I'm double duty, man. No, man. And you mentioned you're digging, man. I read your stuff, man. You're crushing it with your evaluations there. And I got about 100 guys down, Lance, and I use your stuff as a guideline. And I always read your stuff, and I love the way you write. And I agree. You got a great eye for sure. And
I appreciate it.
Agree with most of your guys. I'd love to. Hopefully, on any, we can talk about some guys for sure.
Yeah,
or off the phone after we get off the call, man.
We can do it. I'm off the radio at 10. I can do it at 10:01. That's not a problem, Mark. You know that. But it is fun. One of the fun things is talking to. I do a podcast with Dane Brugler, who does a really good job at The Athletic. DJ and I, Daniel Jeremiah and I, talk all the time about players, and it's fun to find out when you see a guy the same, but it's also fun to have a disagreement and try to figure out, now, why do I see that guy so much different? If you're open-minded and you realize maybe I'm looking at him the wrong way. I always find that interesting to talk to other people that I trust their eye so that I see maybe I'm seeing it the right way. Or other times, if you're open, you say, okay, what am I missing here? Why am I the lone guy that's not on this guy or that is on this guy?
Yeah, and that's the fun part of being a part of scouting staff for my whole life and running drafts, where you, from the outside, people think, okay, there's this player X and everyone thinks the same way. Well, no, when you get into a draft meeting, you know, you've got 10 scouts, 15 scouts, you've got 5 coaches, 10 coaches, and you've got all kinds of different opinions. Now, there may be a consensus about a person, but you always want to have it where there's some disagreement. But as long as guys have put in the work and they've got an eye and you trust their eye, you're going to have those differences of the way you look at people. And I've been a part of that. You know, I've been a part of that as a young scout, where I saw, like, what am I missing here? What is going on?
Yeah.
And also running drafts, where you're like, okay, what's going on? And still to this day, where I'm watching guys that are supposed to be first, second picks in the draft, in this draft, and I'm saying, what is going on here? What are they saying to this guy? So that's always going to take place, and I think that's good and that's healthy. And the draft has proved that out, where half the guys in the first round aren't going to make it. So we go into this season, and we got to sell it for sure, but we go into draft season and think everyone's going to be a Hall of Famer, but the reality is half of these guys are going to fail. So yes, it's going to be you have to find the ones that you're really going to be right on and the ones that you may miss, and why is that? And just kind of talk about it and hash it out with scouts, whoever you trust, and hash out what those differences are and what really makes a good player. And that's what really makes it fun. To me,
I say what had to have made. I tell you one thing that's interesting for me is, so I try not to watch these guys during the college season, other than just for fun, just watch the game, because I don't want to filter. When I get all their tape, that's when I start. I don't want to have a plus or minus filter. I want to look at them with virgin eyes and have the ability to be as open minded as possible. Because if you watch with a filter one way or the other, that's what you start looking. You look for confirmation bias on players. And so what I always find interesting is the national narrative will build up on a player early on, and especially through ESPN, because they're the ones who can talk about underclassmen. We really can't at NFL Network the same way. And then when you watch tape on a guy and you go like, what in the hell? What?
Yeah.
Why do they have this guy right here?
Yeah, Lance, that's why I respect what you do so much and how you write, because when I jump into it, I do have to use a guide of who's up there, because I don't really know these guys at all. So I do use kind of the mock drafts as a guide.
Sure.
But then when I I just see who they are, and then I start watching tape. I don't read anything. Then after I do mine, then I go back and read what you write with DJ Wright's Bucky, because of work with you guys and respect. And more times than not, the way I see it, I'm like, Lance nailed this. Lance didn't go with the crowd on this guy. He really watched the tape and dug in on the weaknesses of this player, that why this guy won't make it. And that's why I really respect how you write your stuff.
Well, the one thing, when you guys are getting paid, it's one thing to sit here and do it from a media standpoint. You can say whatever you want, and it's fine. Plus, minus, doesn't matter. But when you're in that room, the room where it happens, and Mark Ross is in there, your jobs are on the line. You cannot afford to have a bias this way or that way. Like, your jobs are on the line when you make decisions. Yes. That's different.
Yes, no question. Yeah, you're right, Lance. And just the... It's easy. Yeah, I can go right and everybody's going to be great, right? And everybody loves that. Everybody wants to hear the positivity about these players and not really the negativity. But the fact is, as I mentioned, most of these guys are not going to make it. So you really do have to look at that. And I love the phrase that people throw out in the media, just find what he can do. And just, why don't they just find what he can do? Well, that's not the reality when you get a guy in a building and you're a linebacker coach, like, coach, this guy can just run. All right, well, can he take on and can he do this? The kid got, the coach is beating the kid down. They're like, no, they don't want to hear that. So it's not find the one thing he can do, because it's really a whole of the player. And, yes, you have to find what he can do, but you have to also see what he cannot do, what could be the killer, the death blow, why he will not make it as well. You have to really dig into all that. Because there's a lot of factors and variables once you get that player in your building.
We could do this for so long. I mean, how the player responds to coaching, what the player's personality is. Does he love the game? What will he do with more money and time on his hands? Like, there's so much that goes into real life talking points that when I do it on the radio and I hear people just give such very basic cursory, like they assume everything's like Madden. It's not like Madden. There's a lot of factors that have to be considered.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I watched a guy last night, a tight end, and, told him he can he's got the athletic ability to do all that, but then when you watch him, it just doesn't look like the guy really knows how to play football. Doesn't look like the guy can really catch the ball very well. And those are the kind of things you have to really look at, this really can't be, well, just coach him up. Well, some guys just don't improve with coaching, and some guys just don't get it. So, again, it's a lot of factors, a lot of variables that go into what makes a good player, and the draft process, and the player that fits your team, and how that player will succeed on your team.
No doubt. Mark, thanks for taking the time, man. You know, I could talk ball with you all day. Hopefully we get a chance to an Indy for a little bit coming up next week.
Definitely, Lance. I hope so, man.
Okay, 9:20 right here. That's Mark Ross, Executive Vice President of Football Ops with the XFL, XFL-NFL, big collaboration. And the XFL kicks off in 2023. I think we're working on trying to get the Roughnecks back here on the station, as a matter of fact. So that would be nice if we do that. Right now, I want to tell you about my friends over at Jack's Grill. You can go to jacksgrillhouston.com. Man, I'm going to tell you what. The nachos, the quesadillas, the white queso, which I'm a big white queso fan. I love all queso, but the white queso is something that's like a little treat. You got the Jack's Ritas for grown-ups to have your margaritas, your beer over there. It's a good place. TV's all over the place, so you can watch games. Saturday afternoon basketball. You've got Saturday afternoon football. Go check out, you know, whatever pro sports are on the TV there. I know the owner of the place is a former defensive lineman for the Purdue Boilermakers and is a big sports fan. So he makes sure he has the TVs in there at all their locations so you can catch your games. It's a really good spot to go for burgers and comfort food and wings. My son Sebastian snacks. His favorite wings in the city are at Jack's Grill. It's what he gets every year for his birthday lunch. He gets Jack's wings with a crap ton of ranch. Every single year, that's what he's locked in on. I think you're going to love them as well. Make sure that you go enjoy yourself, whether it's just you for lunch today, for dinner, after a baseball practice. Go experience the great food, the good people, great people, I should say, and just a lot of fun over at one of the locations. It's jacksgrillhouston.com.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
conversation continues on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, Cruz Jr. is going to be coming up. Jose Cruz Jr. in just a second. We'll get with him on Rice. Just want to give him a shout-out, promote HBU, our old buddies, Lance Berkman and Jose Cruz Jr. I still got Jose Cruz Jr. I'll bring it up with him when he's on the radio. When he came in studio with me and John when he was a young player from Toronto. So Buster only had an article that says, a hurricane of activity, eight things that will happen once the MLB lockout ends. One of the things, because I'm a hater, that I like seeing is that Freddie Freeman may leave the Braves. I couldn't really work up. I didn't dislike the Braves. They seem like a really hard-nosed, scrappy team. I respected them. I didn't work up a dislike of the Braves. But it doesn't mean that I don't want other people to lose their best players, too, because I do. So Freddie Freeman was previously believed he'd re-sign with the Braves. Looks like that is the idea shifted, that he'll look for a six-year deal and will probably end up somewhere else. So good. Another team will lose their best player, or one of their best players. Well, their best player, as the Astros will lose probably one of their best players. Here's what Buster says. Teams in need of shortstop will immediately dive into the most current medical information on Carlos Correa and Trevor Story. He says Correa's 27 is regarded as one of the best the position. He recently linked up with Scott Boras, hoping to get in the neighborhood of Francisco Lindor, $341 million, or Corey Sager deal, $325 million. Whoever signs Correa will want to be comfortable with whatever information can be gleaned about his lower back issues. And any team interested in Story is going to want, and I don't care about Story, so we'll stop there. But for Carlos Correa, that is something. We're about to break it again real quick, so just sit tight. But don't forget this. This is the one tricky little pebble in the shoe, or pee in the mattress, or bug in the haystack, whatever made up colloquialism I just threw at you. This is the one little turd in the punch bowl. I like that better, that you have going on here. If teams feel like Carlos Correa is a dangerous long-term potential addition because of his lower back issues and some of the issues he's had in the past with injury, that's the one thing that could prevent them from saying that they want to go with a 9 or 10 year deal. And that's something that is a real possibility that teams don't want to get stuck, because these are going to be guaranteed deals. And if he's going to be $33 million plus over 9 to 10 years, that's a real concern. So teams are going to have to be okay with his health, you know, with his future health and with his long-term durability. So that's just one thing. I know he's probably gone. I don't care about him taking pictures with his friends. And what do you think, just because he's going to leave, he can't do anything with his friends anymore? No, just because he's at UFC with them doesn't mean he's coming back. That doesn't mean that. The bag is the bag over brotherhood. That's really honestly what's going to take place. But if somebody feels like Carlos Correa, if teams feel like he's too big of a risk at 9 or 10 years, maybe the Astros are back in the market. Who knows? 9:28, we come back. Very short break here. We're going to talk to Jose Cruz Jr., the manager of the Your Rice Owls baseball team. Maestro Dobell, I'm the manager of my bottle of Maestro Dobell, although we're almost out, so I need to get a refill of the Añejo, which is one of my favorite versions of their tequila. They have Reposado, Añejo. You can go to their website at maestrodobell.com and read up on who they are and what they are. And 11 generations of tequila makers. They use 100% blue agave, and they do an incredible job. The packaging is really slick, good-looking bottle. That's, you know, for your high-end tequilas and spirits, a lot of times you want to have the really cool packaging. They've got a really high-end tequila that's the best I've ever tasted. It's their Cristalino version of their Añejo Extra. And the Cristalino versions are charcoal filtered, and so it really gives it a very distinct flavor, look, and finish. And that's one of the reasons I love Maestro Dobell's, because no matter what you're looking for, whether it's a sipping tequila, whether it is a cocktail that you want to have that's a little smoky, or with a reposado, or maybe you just want a great margarita, they've got a variety that is waiting for you. Go wherever fine liquors are sold, you're going to find Maestro Dobell. If you don't find it there, demand that they start carrying it. Maestro Dobell.
Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
9:33 here on The Bench, Lance Erline solo. John Granato will be back on Monday. I will be doing the show Monday, and then I fly out to the Combine in Indianapolis to do my coverage for NFL Network, etc., and NFL.com. Joining us right now is an old friend of the show, and I was just listening to, I've still got it, when Jose Cruz Jr., who is now the manager of the Rice Owls, came in studio with me and Johnny. He was a young buck from the Toronto Blue Jays, and I was listening to an intro where Bad Boys for Life came on, and John Granato said, I don't have to sing the song. I live it. John Granato, bad, and you know what? He was actually accurate at that time. Little did I know that he is a bad boy for life. So, dude, long time no catch up. You're a guy that I got to spend a little time with in the early 2000s, and really enjoyed spending some time talking to you about some different things. I remember you brought Aaron Brooks to my birthday party when it was downtown Houston was popping back in the day. Y'all were both doing an autograph signing, but I saw you at the World Series. You were there with your wife and Eric Layden, who actually co-hosted the show with me yesterday, has seats in front of you. And he had told me that in the last World Series that the Astros were in, that he had, you know, spent time talking baseball, talking ball with you. Just out of curiosity, before we get to baseball, have you ever seen Eric on any of the shows? Do you guys watch a lot of streaming shows, movies, things like that?
Absolutely. I saw him on Ozark.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, look at the chef, man.
Yeah.
I was like, telling my wife, hey, do you recognize him? He's looking at him. He's like, remember the playoffs? He's like, oh, my God, that's him? Well, that's him.
That's a bad boy chef.
Yeah, that's right. He's the bad boy chef.
He's the bad boy chef. He told me when he was snorting a heroin and for the scenes or whatever, no, the meth, he said it's actually, just so you know, you can tell your wife this, is actually powdered milk. Like, powdered milk is what they use. So he said it doesn't okay, make so you feel that great, but that's him. What they use.
We're not going to judge him, then.
No, I mean, hey, he got paid for it, so whatever.
Are those tattoos real? That's a question.
Yeah, he claims it's powdered milk. But, you know, they were in Atlanta, so they filmed in Atlanta, so you don't know what jumps off in the ATL. So we do know what's jumping off today at 2 o'clock, and that's going to be you guys are taking on HBU. We had Lance Berkman on just a little bit earlier. It's going to be a day game. Let's just get right to it. What has it been like for you to be a manager of young men, a guy who you've been in those players' position at Rice before? How much of your experience being a former player at Rice goes into the way that you handle young players? Because you even have said yourself, you're way different than, say, Wayne Graham was, who managed you.
That's right. Well, the first weekend for us, we ended up getting the great fortune of going up against a team that was ranked the number one team in the nation, a team that's been together for years. You know, that's like, I think, what is maybe Pierce's sixth year there or so. You know, and I've known David Pierce, who's now, if you don't know, the head coach of the University of Texas baseball team. He was here for at least 9 years with the Rice Owls. He was part of the championship team and all that. So I got a chance to really get to know him over the years. And, you know, to go up against him, a guy that I respect, and watch, like, basically the polished, finished product of what it looked like in many ways was nice. I mean, they absolutely ran through us for 3 days, but it was nice to see that the way that moved. I mean, it's not necessarily the my style, but just to see a finished product is going to be. It was nice for all of us to kind of take a look at what we got going on here. At the same time, it was like an adjustment, I think, for our guys that, you know, ultimately we're trying to create something here that's special. I mean, we're never going to be able to recruit 20 guys a year or whatever it is that some of these big schools get. We have to cherry pick a little bit better, and ultimately we have to develop better. So that's part of what we need to do that's different, I think, than other big programs. We have to draft the right guys. There has to be an academic component to the player as well, and we have to develop. And I think we're good at that. I think the thing became, you know, I think we're teaching it well. I think we're developing talent well. So now it becomes, how can I get that talent to do everything that we're working on and execute it on the field?
during the game time. And that's going to be our challenge right now, which we did take a little step back on how we go about our business for game prep, because I think we did a really good job, except for it didn't come out on the field like we had anticipated, except for I thought our positioning and everything that how we prepared for it was really good. I mean, we probably saved ourselves 7 or 8 runs on just positioning it by itself. So, you know, it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
It's a work in progress, but we're excited for it.
The Jose Cruz Jr. that we spoke with in studio when you were a player is obviously way different than the one now who's managing. All of us grow, and we're different. We're impacted by different people in our lives. From a baseball standpoint, the manager you are right now, who do you look back and draw from, whether it's a player or a manager or a position, you know, whatever the kid, batting coach, pitching coach, who do you look back towards through your career, either with them or just in observing them, that you think has been influential on who you are right now?
That's a hell of a question, man. You know, obviously, my father had a big impact in me as a person and a player. So that, I mean, it starts there. If you want to start looking at different things from where my baseball IQ started to come into play. I think when it comes to, like, manager-wise, I mean, two guys that I draw from that I have a lot of commonality in it, and a guy that I respect and I'm always in communication with, that I like, I feel like I'm kind of something like these two guys, is I like A.J. Hinch and I like Alex Cora. Kind of those two guys were guys
more,
that
more
I...
quiet guys.
That I kind of draw from for style-wise as far as how you do different things, how you look at baseball. And like one of the things that I learned from A.J. was he's just a brilliant communicator. He's so good at the communication game and letting you know where you're at and what you're supposed to do. And anything baseball related, it's like there is no guessing. You know exactly where you're at, what's going on, and he's very sharp at what's happening. I think Alex is really brilliant, like in-game stuff. Like he looks at a lot of different things, and he loves Swiss Army knives all over the field. You know, he loves a certain type of hitter, you know, which we kind of like a certain type of hitter as well, that kind of does a little bit of everything, not necessarily really big on one thing or really big on another, just like a lot of things together that creates such a – becomes a dynamic team guy. And I think that's why he's had so much success, because he identifies certain things and he's able to communicate to the guy what to look for, how to approach it. You know, so, and he's always steady. Like there's not so much of an up and down. He's just steady. So those things like that, those are the two guys that I really appreciate how they do their thing, and guys that I admire and look up to.
It's Jose Cruz Jr. is our guest right now. He's manager for Rice. Rice takes on HBU tonight, but they got the home opener on Friday. And if you guys want to go, we got a 4-pack that we're giving away right now. Just be the first caller, 713-780-3776. You got a chance to go. You and your buddies, you and your friends, your work coworkers, your kids, whatever the case may be, you can do that. 713-780-3776. Do you know what you want it to? I know you know in a general sense what you want it to look like. You just talked about that. Have you figured out what you want the end game vision to look like? Is that something that you can? Is there a way you can aspire to it, or do you think you need to be a manager longer before you even recognize what it's supposed to look like?
What do you mean by end game?
Well, I mean, what is your ultimate goal for the Rice? You gave me a general sense. Do you have a really dialed in goal for Rice? You know, is it national championship?
You're talking about, like an end product, like finished product?
Yeah. When you say, okay, mission accomplished, this is how I wanted Rice baseball to be.
Okay. I want Rice baseball to be something that is where people come and they never leave. I want them to be able to come through the program and come back to it, like return to it as an alumni and be part of it and be connected. I think it speaks volumes when you have guys that go through the program and come back and are part of it and are engaged. I think that's valuable. At the same time, I'd like to get the best talent we could possibly get our hands on, bring it here, develop them, give them tools to succeed in whatever way. I mean, my whole thing is like win at life, because I want our guys to win at life ultimately to be successful. I mean, if win at life means getting some guys up to the major leagues, great. If win at life means running some companies, you know, great. So it's like that is important to me. But at the same time, it's like I think we have a lot to offer on the baseball side of it to be able to get you to where you want to be if you have the talent to do it. It's not easy, like going somewhere and be like, hey, I'm going to be a major leaguer. I mean, it's not like you don't sign up for it. Right, you got to have the skill set. You got to be good enough. You got to create a body of work, and all that. It's a big sacrifice and commitment. But I mean, we're here for it. We're here for it. Ultimately, to build something where people would want to come. People know they're going to get better when they come here, and ultimately be one of the top 10 programs in the nation. I mean, the goal is to win it. We've done it. We've done it before. I mean, for us, it's definitely a challenge because. First, we're small school. You know, second, we're expensive. You know, third, we're academic, right? Those are tough ones. We're limited in scholarships, so those are challenges. Yeah. So, you know, we got to find a way to get the right guys, cherry pick the right guys, bring them in.
Yeah.
And you know, make them into juggernauts.
Yeah, that's a great answer because it's always more for team builders, for people who build teams and programs. You always look at the end result being. A result on a field or a court, but the reality is it's really a lot more than that. It's always more than that. It's about atmosphere. It's about culture. It's about a way. It's about a process, not just a result. It's always about process with the best team builders. So I think that's a really
100%. I think one of the coolest things that I've experienced so far in my job has been the amount of people, the amount of Rice people that have come out of the woodworks and reengaged their program. Like there's a connection with having a Rice guy being at this position, you know, to the point where, I mean, I was in Austin and it was just like all these guys from Rice came out, you know, to reengage with our team and had like a little bit more of an excitement back to the program about it. Right. And understanding what's happening, understanding where we need to go. You know, everybody's like, okay, I'm on board. I like it. I'm going to be part of the program. I'm going to be near the stadium. I'm going to be a bunch of games. And I'm going to support what's happening. So, I mean, those things have been like one of the things that I've really I've appreciated the most. And I wasn't sure how it was going to be received. And it's been received so positively that it's like, okay, so everybody knows it. Like the players feel it. The coaches feel it. You know, the athletic department feels it. So it's like now it's like let's build on it. And I think, I mean, we will. We got a lot of smart people here as far as baseball people and strategic in how you teach and get guys to execute it. I mean, that's going to be our next step to be able to get these guys to execute in the game. But I mean, I think we're going to do it and everybody's going to support us. So we're excited for it.
That's Jose Cruz Jr., manager of the Rice Owls. Man, it was great catching up with you again. Good stuff. I definitely would love to do it again once season's over.
Absolutely,
get you back,
man.
In studio with me and John. Bad boys for life.
Oh, that'd be great. And where is he at? Is he in Louisiana?
He's in Louisiana. He's in Prague. That fancy boy's in Prague right now.
Oh, my God.
I know. Unbelievable. Living the life.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Living
whatever,
the life.
John.
Hey, good luck to you today against Berkman and HBU. Good luck to you also on Friday on the home opener. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Congratulations, man, for coming home and taking over the program.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. That's Jose Cruz Jr. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up with you. And thanks to Rice University for giving us the four tickets for the home opener. And good luck. Best of luck to Jose Cruz Jr. We're going to wrap it up here. Coming up in just 1 second, I want to tell you about Aqueduct Plumbing Company. Billy and Mary. Billy, their brother, sister. Billy owns the company. Mary works with him. She many times will answer the phone. I'm very happy to speak for them, and here's why. Plumbing, I got screwed so bad 2 years ago by a plumbing company that crushed me. And it's because I didn't realize the pricing. It was an emergency thing that had to get done. I happen to remember their phone number because it's easy to remember, and they are the worst. Then I found Aqueduct Plumbing Company, and I've used them twice and both times. Not only is it affordable, they're fast, they're efficient, and they're honest. And that's why we speak for them. That's why John and I put the cape on for them, because we know that when we speak for them, you're not going to get screwed by them. And in fact, it's going to be the opposite. One day repiping jobs, moving, doing simple jobs at your home, doing construction work at your home, remodeling work. They can do the big jobs, the small jobs. That's what they specialize in, and they do it for affordable prices. They do it when they say they're going to do it, and most importantly, you can trust them. Go to thebenchplumbing.com for more information, thebenchplumbing.com.
ESPN 97.5. The conversation continues on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
What's up, everybody? All right, so we do have a couple giveaways, or actually just one. If you want to see the Dropkick Murphys come play Bayou Music Center on March 2nd, you should be the fourth caller right now. Fourth caller to 713-780-3776. Gets to see Dropkick Murphys March 2nd at Bayou Music Center with the Bomb Pops and the Rum Jacks performing live as well. This is for their 2022 St. Patrick's Day American Tour. All right. Here you go, Lance.
That was really smooth. You should be on radio. All right. Here you go, Lance. I got something for you. Don't take off your headphones. I got something for you.
You got to do the giveaway real quick.
Oh, go ahead. What do we? Oh, yeah. You do that. You do that. I'll read this story. The strange case of a New England college student who had both his legs amputated after eating leftovers is getting renewed attention thanks to a viral video. The 19-year-old man in question was admitted to the pediatric intensive care unit of Massachusetts General Hospital, the result of shock, multiple organ failure, and rash, according to a March 21 edition of New England Journal of Medicine. The YouTube channel Chubby Emu, run by Dr. Bernard Sue, a licensed toxicologist, posted a video of the case February 16th. A 19-year-old man identified on the YouTube videos, JC, has started feeling abdominal pains and nausea after eating rice, chicken, and lo mein leftovers from a restaurant meal. He began vomiting. This, that, and the other thing happened. A friend who he had been staying with took an emergency room where he was flown by helicopter to a hospital. His temperature hit 105. His heart rate was 166 beats a minute. Blood and urine tests indicated the man had Neisseria meningitis, according to Dr. Bernard. When bacteria are present in the blood, the entire blood vessels dilate, dropping the blood pressure, preventing oxygen from getting to the organs. Oh, my gosh. With many complications that included necrosis of the arms and legs and gangrene, leading to the amputation or parts of all 10 fingers and below his knee. That's what happened to this man. The doctor later believed he did not have a booster shot of the meningococcal conjugate vaccine when he was 16. Despite the amputations, doctor said he had a relatively good recovery. I mean, if you can relatively recover well from losing all of your limbs, I guess so. That's a relatively good one. After eating leftover noodles, so he didn't have one of his shots, one of his vaccines for this type of meningitis. I would get that one. If you won't get the COVID one, you might want to get this one that keeps your limbs from being amputated when you eat leftover noodles. I would definitely consider that one. Might want to get that one. I'm curious, Tyler, what's your this guy just had all of his limbs amputated because he had some leftover noodles. I'm sure it's more complicated than that. What's your leftover food? Why do people put pizza in a refrigerator? How can pizza go bad after it's been cooked at a high temperature?
Yeah, anything can go bad. I mean, anything can hit the danger zone as a lover
something
of
that's
restaurants,
been cooked.
You know what the danger zone is.
Something that's been cooked and bacteria killed, if it's out overnight, is still dangerous?
Yeah, if it hits a certain temperature range, which is called the danger zone, if it hits that.
Is that a technical term, or are you just making that
no,
up?
No, it's a
you got it on a YouTube video, didn't you?
It's a restaurant thing. Like, that's why everything needs to be refrigerated, never needs to be left out for like an hour or whatever. So even if it's cooked, if it gets left out for a long period of time, then that's whenever bacteria starts forming. That's what can cause.
Is there anything
that's what normally causes food poisoning.
Is there anything better leftover-wise for you that's better leftover than when it's you have originally?
To lose a limb, I would
probably... No, I'm not asking you to lose a limb. Like, is there a food that you think, you know what, I actually like this better when it's leftover than when I had it the first time?
I'm going to go pizza, I think. Pizza is...
You think so? Do you reheat it in an oven now or microwave?
Yeah, I'm the frying pan method. You put a little water in there, put the pizza in, and then that remelts the cheese.
But what about the crisp?
Whenever the water evaporates, it crisps up the crust.
It does?
Yeah. Try it, like a tablespoon or two of water.
What about just
put the pizza
in the oven?
Slice in there.
That's better than putting it in the oven?
Yeah.
Really?
Sure. Yeah, put a lid on there.
Water bam. On the crust?
Yeah. I'm telling you, it works.
And the crust doesn't get all soggy?
No, it evaporates off.
Huh. That's InfoLine. I didn't even know I was going to have an InfoLine today, but the last discussion on the show turns into an InfoLine. I'm going to try it. Water on the pizza crust seems a little... I'll give it a shot. I'll see what happens. 9:57. Hey, guys, thanks to all the guests who joined me today. Mark Ross, Carrington Harrison, Cruz Jr., Lance Berkman, Rodney Williams, so many. Mark Appel. If you missed any of them, you might want to check them out online, ESPN 97.5. You can check out the podcast. Coming up next, Vanessa and Gallant. They will take you all the way through their show. Just keep it right here. Make it easy the entire day on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Gator Belton, Patty Milton,
Monte Carlo, and Elder Rock. To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HR&P eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.